Yeah, hold on. Can you see me?
No.
Okay, cool. Because I'm like naked as shit right now.
Well, fucking turn your feet on.
No.
All right, so listen. Before we get started, we know we have our topics today are going to be Deadpool, and spoiler alert to anybody who's listening, we're going to full spoilers for Deadpool, Wild Wild Country, and of course the shooting that happened yesterday. Before that, I wanted to get some quick hits in there. First out, shouts to Malcolm X. Today's his birthday.
Yeah, happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Malcolm. You were gone too soon. I think that one of the real tragedies of losing Malcolm is that I think that if you look at the very end of his career, he was finally getting over some of the biases that were holding him back, both in regards to race and gender, but we'll never get to find out what he would have become. It's really too bad. I would say him and RFK Jr., I think really, we'll never know what we could have had from those two men.
Yeah, it's no coincidence that people who were evolving and taking on race were murdered.
Oh, of course not. No. That's not surprising at all.
Yeah.
It's sadly predictable, right? Him and also Fred Hampton. We never know what we could have gotten from those guys. Secondly, I want to go ahead and put myself on record. We could talk about this in a different episode, but Rockets and Six. I'm putting it out there. Rockets and Six. Okay. Rockets and Six. We're going to go into Oracle and win Game 6.
Okay. I said Rockets in... Or no, I said Warriors in 5, so... Well, I feel like I'm still on pace for that.
Technically, we both are.
Yeah.
We'll see if we get this... We got to get a split in Golden State.
Yeah. This series really going to hinge on foul calls. Because I think both game 1 and 2 were very much affected by the foul calls because these teams are really even. So it's really shit like that's going to determine it. Because I think in game 1, if Draymond doesn't get that third foul early, he loses his shit and gets kicked out. Because he was like on a tear in that first half, like where he was just trying to get his ass kicked out. And then Ariza's fifth foul completely collapsed the Rockets.
That's what we were talking about that too. And I think that's what it gets to my quick point, and then we'll move on because, you know, the season's, it's mid-series, so it's hard to, early in the series, hard to know what's really going to happen. But
exactly.
I think the second units are going to decide this series. I think that the only weakness
the Warriors don't have a second unit, though.
Exactly. The only weakness is their bench. Sean Livingston is still nice, but David West is... I won't say he's washed because he still contributes, but he can't stay on the floor for 20 minutes.
He didn't play any at all in the second half in game 2.
Yeah, he can't keep
up. He only played first half. Yeah, he can't keep up. They're playing a lot of Looney. Yeah, they don't have a bench, but they can stagger their stars enough. They're fine.
Oh, of course, of course. That's our strategy too, right?
But
our second unit has to increase or maintain leads. They can't. That's where the game is going to be won or lost. Is in the second unit.
As soon as the Warriors have a 5-point lead, that's a 20-point lead for anybody else. You know.
Yeah, and Trevor plays 42 minutes, so he's the only one that ties those units together, right?
Yeah, and poor Luke, man. Luke just can't. I think he's still hurt. Like, I think he's trying to play hurt, and it's in his head. He can't make layups, and David Thorpe was talking about Luke's probably the key to this series, and I don't think he's going to be a factor.
We'll see how he does on the road. I'm thinking it might have been the moment. I think we lost game 1 because I think the supporting role players choked a little. I know that it didn't help that we weren't passing the ball enough, but.
Well, the Warriors' intensity was way higher in game 1 than it was in game 2. Like, their defense, like, they were on the line, in the Rockets' face, like, on them, like, in James's shit the whole time. Like, they didn't have that same intensity in game 2, and our defense was better in game 2. Yeah. So they missed a lot of Warriors' shots. Like, they missed a lot of threes that they normally get, and, like, because I thought we were going to lose game 2, honestly, because they just weren't making shots in the first half. I didn't think they'd have 2 bad halves, and they did, which is good for us. Oh. But now we're going to have to win a game where it's going to be pretty much even the whole time. And that's going to be an Oracle game.
Right.
And I know we can win an Oracle. I just think if we get one good Steph game, we're going to lose it.
Well, that Steph game is coming, right? But
yeah, you just gotta... I think that's game three because it's the long layoff. He's going to be at home. And that crowd is fantastic. So game three is going to be tough. But if we steal game three, all right. Let's fucking go.
All right. Well, okay. So one last quick thing. Have you ever watched The Office?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm watching it basically for
British
the first
time. British or American?
American. I haven't watched the British one.
Okay.
Yet. Okay. Okay, so when it came on TV back in the day, I caught most of the early episodes. When Jim moved to Connecticut, I pretty much lost interest, and I never caught up. So I'm watching it, and I missed a lot. So I just had the basic sketch of the story, because everybody was watching it, so I'd catch it with them, mostly. But I've never watched it before, and it's not... I don't know what I was expecting. When it's funny, it's really funny, but it's often kind of lazy, especially with almost every major narrative involves who's fucking who, and it just gets really boring after a while. Although Jim and Dwight together is always magic.
Jim and Dwight are a great dynamic. They're probably the dynamic that people got attached to, and that's why they watched the show, because I think in other parts of it were real lazy. I think Michael Scott was a great character. But they got really lazy with him just because Steve Carell is fucking hilarious and he can make almost anything funny.
That guy is, yeah, he's a goat, that dude.
Yeah. How far are you? Have you got to when he's left yet?
No. I know he leaves. I'm in season 6 right now. It's super watchable. So, I'll say this because I just put it on because I've been grading and stuff, and it's super watchable. Like before, I've noticed it's like I've watched, you know, because they're like 25 minutes each. I've watched like 6 of them, you know.
Yeah.
So
is Rashida Jones still around?
No, she's gone. What happened is Jim is now the co-manager.
Oh, this is the co-manager? Okay.
Which is interesting. Season 5 was legit excellent, though, because that's the
I
one where...
I think that's probably the peak. That's the peak
the
office.
The Michael Scott Paper Company?
Yes, that's peak office. It's Michael Scott Paper Company.
Yeah, it was also just honestly refreshing that the main story didn't revolve around a love affair. So it was really...
Yeah.
Gave it opportunities to tell different kinds of jokes.
That's the biggest criticism for that guy's shows. Michael Schur and I forget the other guy's
name. Dan Gore?
I think it's Jeff Daniels. Dan Gore, yeah. But if you look at Parks and Rec had a lot of that shit too.
Parks and Rec is better than The Office, though.
It is better. Overall better show. I think it's because it's got just better actors also.
Yeah,
like,
it's got a better
cast. That had a murderous row of funny people in that show.
Yeah, a lot of people came out of that show that was like really had great careers. Chris Pratt, Amy Poehler. The mean girl who's, I can't believe I'm forgetting
her. Yeah, I can't think of her name right now either. She's on Legion too.
Yeah, she made Legion amazing. She was fantastic. Yeah. I'm forgetting her name. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Retta, Aziz Ansari.
Oh my god, like, Aziz, yeah.
Yeah, like fucking Nick Offerman. Like that show just had like some of the funniest people collected.
yeah, that was a phenomenal cast.
Yeah.
And my theory, though, however, is that the actual villain of The Office is Jim.
Oh, yeah.
Jim is terrible.
Jim's a shithole. He breaks up a relationship. He torments his coworker constantly.
Yeah.
Jim's legit. He sucks.
There was an episode where they decided him to be co-managers, and Jim is mad at Michael for not giving him a recommendation, and all he did was read his performance review, and like, no, actually, Jim's a terrible employee. Like, why would you give that guy more authority? He's awful. The only person who understood how much Jim sucks was Idris Elba.
Yeah, and that was great how he just didn't like him.
I loved it.
That was so funny.
I loved it because I don't like Jim. I think
Also, when Idris Elba came on there, it was like, holy shit, Stringer Bell's on here now?
Yeah. I saw them and I was like, what? Idris Elba? And I loved how all the ladies were super into him. And I'm like, I'm with the ladies. Idris Elba is fucking beautiful.
Yeah, he's a handsome man.
Yeah, he is. Like, holy crap. I am the soul collector dressed in ebony. There are no rules. think of Deadpool? What are your takes?
I thought it was all right.
Just all right, for real?
Well, I thought parts of it were a little too sappy.
Yeah.
I was like, some of it was like way too sappy. Like, I'm just like, I'm not really here to see this.
Yeah, Deadpool 2, I really liked it. But, and I'll sort of talk about it this way because of what you just said. Deadpool 2 is really kind of two movies. You have Act 1, which is Vanessa's death,
mm-hmm.
and all the sappiness that comes with Vanessa's death, which I thought was just okay. When I was watching, I was like, okay, this is just going to be okay. Then you have Acts 2 and 3, which is the X-Force movie, and that part I really liked. In fact, Act 2
is great.
Is amazing.
Anything with X-Force, like the parachute scene, the moment that scene happened, I looked over to Javi, I was like, how many do you think are going to die from this?
Oh.
And Javi went, 5. Oh, yeah.
I did not see it coming.
Oh, man, that's the best joke, though, because I'm like, what would be the funniest joke? Oh, it's like, they've built the trailer around all of this. It's everyone dying.
That's what I love, too. They put so much effort into marketing all those characters. I don't know, I won't say I was upset, but first of all, shouts to them for always picking these obscure little Marvel characters. Like, two things that happened to me. When they're marketing Bedlam, I was like, Bedlam?
Yeah.
Like, that guy was, like, in, like, 5 stories. That guy's, like, I barely remember what he does. Like,
yeah.
And then when they were introducing, they had Vanisher. I was like, Vanisher? I was trying to remember where I even saw Vanisher before. But I recognized them. And then in the marketing, though, when they had Shatterstar, I was like, Shatterstar? That guy sucks. Like, nobody likes Shatterstar.
They knew what they were doing.
You didn't even disguise him. You made him look like Shatterstar. And then I thought, okay, well, maybe I will. You know, they've made me like characters I didn't like by bringing them to the big screen before. Like, whoa, they actually made that guy not terrible. You know, Iron Man, Thor, Doctor Strange.
I was just going to say Iron Man.
All examples of characters I was just very meh about that now I really like.
I'm still very meh about Doctor Strange.
Yeah, well, yes, me too. he really brought it in Infinity War, but Doctor Strange is just Iron Man again with magic. That's all it is.
Magic, yeah.
It's just magic Iron Man. That's all he is. But anyway, so I thought, okay, maybe what I've always wanted is I want Legion to do it, but I'll take it. I want someone to try to make Mojo World. I just want someone to try it. And just embrace the weirdness of Mojo World. And then they actually said Mojo World in the movie, and I thought, is Deadpool going to set up Mojo World for down the road? Because I would love to see Deadpool go to Mojo World. That would be perfect.
Yeah.
And then they just killed him. And I was just like, what? And then I was like, I guess I'm not glad to see him go, but you just dangled Mojo World in front of me, movie. That's kind of a low blow.
Terry Crews was the only death I was sad about because Terry Crews is amazing in everything.
I knew they'd kill Terry Crews. I didn't think they'd kill him there. I thought when they cast Bedlam, I was like, this guy is a red shirt. This guy's going to die. When I heard rumors that Juggernaut was in it, my immediate thought was like, Juggernaut's going to kill Bedlam.
But yeah.
No, I mean, his death was pretty funny. You see him like giving him CPR in the background. Like, that was a super funny death.
And also an ecstatic character.
Oh, the acid spit guy. Yeah, the big guy. Yeah, that's right. He even had his little goggle things.
Yeah.
Yeah, the ecstatic character, I also knew he would die because that's the gag with ecstatics is they all die.
Exactly. Yeah.
But I did not think any of them would die there. In fact, when I saw the guy from X-Statics and he wasn't in the trailers, I was like, red shirt, you know, I knew it. But I didn't think it'd do it all immediately.
Yeah.
I absolutely, though, fell in love with the girl who plays Domino. She was in Dear White People, right?
She's in Atlanta.
That's what it is, Atlanta. I knew I recognized her.
Yeah, she's in Atlanta.
She was fantastic. She was so much charisma. See, and there's an example. Like, I don't give a shit about Domino. I always thought my feelings about Domino were the trailer's feelings about Domino. Like, this character is dumb and makes no sense. Like, why are we hanging on to her? But now I'm super glad that we did because they made her so hilarious. She fits so perfectly in Deadpool's universe, which is why I wanted to go to Mojo World. Deadpool 3 needs to go to Mojo World.
We'll see.
Are you telling me you don't want? You don't want to see Deadpool mess around with some X-Babies? Dude, those baby legs were hilarious.
The baby legs were funny.
They ran it into the ground. They ran it into the ground, but it was
till it was funny again. It came back around.
Yeah, till it was funny again. They are. They do commit to the like, this will be funny again if we keep doing it. Like breaking the fourth wall jokes. They were. And I saw a lot of people complaining about the breaking the fourth wall jokes, but every time I see it, I was like, have you not read a Deadpool comic? That's all all the time.
That's what frustrated me with the sappiness. Like, if you were going to do that, if that was going to be the main thread, like, at least be a satire of, like, fuck this, you know?
Yeah.
Like the whole going into the afterlife and, like, you need to find it in your heart thing. Like, if you would have given me a more exaggerated version of that where it's absurd, I think I would have enjoyed that more.
I agree. And I think that's always been one of Deadpool's biggest problems is that for all it does to make fun of superhero tropes, its stories are so stereotypical.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the redemption narrative is not new. You know, the love narrative isn't new. When they kept saying his heart was in the wrong place, I was really hoping it was literally, like they put him back together wrong. That's what I was hoping.
Yeah.
So when they shot him in the chest, like, oh, my heart's not there anymore. My heart's in my butt or something like that.
Yeah.
But they didn't do that.
No.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it. I laughed a lot. Like, there's a lot of good jokes in it.
I think this one's funnier than Deadpool 1. I think it's better than Deadpool 1.
I think I enjoyed Deadpool 1 more because it was newer at the time, but I definitely laughed more during this movie.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's a fair way to say. Deadpool was so surprising that they made it and it wasn't stupid.
Yeah, exactly.
And which again reiterates what I've been saying is I don't want Disney anywhere near Fox, anywhere near Deadpool. Like, they would never do that baby legs joke.
No.
Or the basic instinct crossing the legs joke, like,
no,
they would never do that.
They would make more. They would make the half of that movie that's sappy instead of the half of that movie that's funny.
Right, right, exactly.
No,
exactly. Yeah, no, thank you. Although I will say, the sappy ending, at least when he's sort of dead but not really, was pretty hilarious.
That joke landed.
Given the sort of like how subtle but not subtle, the take on me going through, pulling him through. That was pretty funny.
Yeah, and also the whole time, like, the only way you could just take the collar off of him and he'd be okay.
Right, right, right. The second, but they're using the collars. Like, what's weird is that the Deadpool movies are weirdly the best representation of X-Men on, in as far as it feels like the comic, right? Like, the use of the use of the collars, all the jokes about the X-Mansion, the sort of goody, the feel good Boy Scout nature of the X-Men, like, they really, it's weirdly the best version of X-Men.
Yeah.
Even
it
Cable
definitely feels the closest to the comic book of any X-Men movie.
Yeah, even Cable looks and feels like Cable, although they adjusted his origin to fit Deadpool's
good, because Cable is stupid.
Yeah. Yeah, he's actually,
if
this at all Cable had ever been, I'd been a little bit more on board with him, but no mention of the, like, even Deadpool's embarrassed about the Ascani clan or whatever fucking group took him.
Yeah. Turned him into a hero, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, but did you see who his daughter was?
No.
Hope. Hope Summers. I don't know if you've read those comics. Hope Summers?
Yeah. No, I haven't read those comics. I didn't know that was his daughter.
In the comics, it's only... I guess symbolically his daughter. Hope Summers is Cyclops' adopted daughter that he saves from the Purifier. It's just a baby.
Okay.
And he gives the baby to Cable to raise in the future because they think that Hope will be able to wield the Phoenix at some point. So they're trying to train her. It's actually, it becomes a big storyline. It's actually excellent. It's actually really good.
Okay.
And Cable's good in it. Like, he's a great, like, father, mentor, like, all you'll know is war kind of guy. He's because they're chasing her through time because the humans want to kill Hope. That would be crazy if Deadpool was slyly setting up Messiah Complex, which is one of the most epic X-Men stories of its history. I actually think it's the best X-Men story. It's the one that ends with X-Men versus Avengers. I actually think it's the best one.
Yeah.
It's my favorite. I'm we also wanted to talk about Wild Wild Country.
Yeah, so I finished it last night. How far are you?
I'm one episode back. But you can talk in full spoilers. I don't care.
Well, there's not much to spoil in the last one. But what are your thoughts on it?
Wow. I mean, I don't know, man. On the one hand, I guess I'm trying to think about the different themes in it because there's so much going on. There is the cultish, you know, if we want to call it a cult. Although, I mean, there's a pretty significant amount of people. I mean, sannyasin is a legitimate religion. It's weird calling it a cult, but that's part of this. What is a cult? Overall, I think it's very sensational. I wish the music choices were a little subtle. I don't feel like I'm learning anything. I guess for our listeners, why don't you recap what it's about a little bit for our listeners?
Okay. So Wild Wild Country is about this group who followed this leader named Osho. I guess he's called Osho now. But back then he was named Pagwan. He started this sort of commune in India, and pretty much a lot of people around the world went there to follow him. And he always had like a secretary, he would call him. And that would be the person who was sort of his mouthpiece and who ran his quote-unquote religion. So they get this idea to go to America to start their own city. So they decide to go to Oregon. And in Oregon, they go to this small town called Antelope, a little bit off there, and they decide to build this entire city from the ground up. And the people who become members of this commune, they're really smart people. It's like, really, if you pay attention to them, they're a bunch of bored, rich white people and different people from around the world, like people down on their luck and things like that. But these people are smart and they're educated, and they decide to build this city in this town. And the actual show itself is about this town combating this group of people and how that escalates. And goddamn, does it escalate.
Yeah. Yeah, so I want to return to one thing you said about, you know, well, first of all, when they build their own city, so in one of the episodes, they actually showed the history of them building this small town, which they named Rajneesh, because that was the name of the religion. They were the Rajneeshis, and they built the town of Rajneesh Puram. And what's crazy about it is they just built a city from scratch. Like when we think cults, you don't think this level of efficacy. Like, how many people, you said there were so many middle class educated people that helped start this town, architects, engineers, they were building wells, laying pipes, infrastructure, building roads, they were renting money for equipment,
they built an airfield,
they built a little mini airport. Like, it was crazy. I was just like, it was honestly inspiring. Like, It was such a pioneer mentality. There were so many times where I'm like, this is so American. Like, I'm just going west.
Yeah.
At least for them, it was east. But going to the American West, finding yourself a patch of land, taming it, and then, you know, suiting it to your purposes. Like, this was an arid, almost, you know, grassy, borderline desert, and they turned it into lush farmland. Like, it was amazing. Yeah.
No, it's I'm legit impressed by these people and what they were able to accomplish with that. And two, they did it all wrong. Like, they just picked the worst possible place to build this town. If they build this in a different part of the country around poor people, they're still fucking operating.
Well, wait, but Antelope didn't seem like it was a money town.
No, the co-founder of Nike. Like, they had poor people, but then they also had the well-to-do people who use it as a retirement town. So you have the co-founder of Nike, and you have these wealthier people. So once is really their biggest mistake, and really for me, this whole thing is like, man, I could have did this better, is they should not have antagonized that town.
Yeah,
that's when all their troubles started.
Yeah, I'll say two things. One, I'll say three things about that, because that's one of the things I've really been thinking about a lot. I think we have to sort of think about where they are historically. They moved to the U.S. late 70s.
Early 80s.
It's also just poorly timed. Like, even a decade before, they probably wouldn't have been dealing with the level of ethnic and religious intolerance that they were getting.
Yep. And that's something the documentary doesn't really talk about. Like, they show it, but it's like there's a very big hint of racism in this.
Racism, particularly because a woman of color and, you know, a queer woman of color, if by queer we're saying, you know, non-heteronormative, which this group of people super was. So just for some more background, the sannyasins, or at least what we would call sannyasins now, the Ranishis, they practice open, free love, and they have these meditative practices that often are very sort of emotionally violent, although nothing seems non-consensual, but they're very openly sexual. They're partner swapping. They don't really have marriages, although the marriages come in later in a real interesting way. And so the local townspeople, who are very white conservative, just are repulsed by them and basically want to shut them down, kind of not here, and really treat them deliberately unfairly, like in a way that's shocking and but not shocking, right?
Yeah.
And trying to use the court systems to run them out of town. And what was great was how much the Rajneeshis used the tactics of the oppressors against them. It was almost like the first half of the Rajneeshis, and you're right, they made some critical mistakes, because then they get real, yeah, their tone becomes real aggressive and confrontational. And it's just like, and it, part of it is, you know, they're tired of being bullied and they're pushing back, and it's very satisfying, mm-hmm, but strategically, huge mistake.
Yeah. She got too ambitious. But I will say this, is she not captivating?
Yeah, she's amazing.
Like, she is, like, I get why white people love Walter White so much after watching this documentary. Like, she is a legit awful person, and the whole time I'm just like, I just want to see what she's going to do next. Like, I'm just, like, in awe of her. Like, I can't even explain it. Like, she's so interesting. And she's like, she has no remorse for anything she's done.
Oh, of course. And she did some terrible things, right? She poisoned, you know.
She
poisoned the town. Those of you listening, so this is spoiler alert, she figures out a way to basically dispense salmonella and just goes around to restaurants with buffets and just sprays the food with salmonella and gets 700 people salmonella. Nobody died, but a lot of people got real sick.
It's the largest bioterror attack in American soil history.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's weird to use those terms for it, but that is what it is.
That's what it is.
It's an attack designed to frighten a population based on a conflict of ideology. Like, it's definitely a terrorist attack, but it's also, like, I don't know, like it's basically giving everybody diarrhea.
Yeah. So they cut vote. Like, she's trying to sway the vote with that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, so there's some context here. They get into local politics. They decide to get people of themselves on their local council. What really made me trip is they had their own police.
Yeah. She was smart. Like, she knew how to circumvent the law to get everything they needed.
Right, she used to know what, and that's what they were doing to her, right? They were circumventing the law to try to get rid of them. So on the one hand, there's a part of me that's like, this is what happens when you bully a minority. Like, they're going to start fighting back, and they're going to fight however they can. It's something like the salmonella attack. That's basic guerrilla tactics. Even the way they did it is guerrilla tactics. And that doesn't excuse it. Like, that's still wrong. Like, you deserve to be punished for that. Yeah. But at the same time, there's a part of me that's like, you know, racist or intolerant. I think it's more religious intolerance than racial intolerance, although it's hard not to note that they talk about the brown woman in terms they don't talk about their white antagonist the same way. Right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, right? So, but at the end of the day, it's just pure religious intolerance. And a part of me is like, well, that's what you get.
Yeah.
You can't keep... if you keep oppressing people, outright open oppression, what's crazy too is that they're not even pretending that's not what it is.
Yeah, they want to shut them down. Like, and it's clear, like, they want to just shut these people down. Even if they hadn't crossed the line, they would still want to shut this down.
Their capacity, the white Oregonians, or the people who lived in Antelope who were fighting back, and then Wasco County as it's expanded beyond the borders of Antelope, they were literally going to disincorporate the town, because if we can't have it, no one can. They were going to basically burn down their whole town. And, you know, the levels of intolerance that they would go to make sure that, you know, these people who just have a different religion than them could not survive. And just the crazy levels of hypocritical intolerance.
Yeah.
It was just really made me marvel at the capacity for people of that demographic to live with zero cognitive dissonance.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Like, I wish I could do
that. The '80s. The '80s, man.
Wow.
It was the '80s. Also, two things about the '80s. One, I find it hilarious that they call them street people on the news every time.
the news podcast, oh my god, the stuff they would say.
And street people, like, goddamn, that shit's hilarious. And two, we were way uglier in the 80s. Like, is there one attractive person in this thing?
I would say yes. I find a lot of the austere women in this to be actually quite attractive.
Yeah. But I'm mostly talking about the news people. Like, there are people on these news telecasts who couldn't even sniff a TV screen these days.
Right. It was actually refreshing. Like, I missed regular ass looking people on TV. That's one of the reasons, I know this is a total aside, I have trouble watching network television, because everyone is, even the ugly people are pretty, and it's just like, this just doesn't look like the real world. Like, I'm just disinterested in it. Give me a couple of average looking motherfuckers, you know. That element, and of course, then they start succumbing to unethical and violent tactics to survive, and that's when you can't support them anymore. Yeah. But for the first, like, three episodes, they were so admirable.
I was going to say, they do a good job of deifying Paquan in, like, the first three episodes. Like, you don't really see much of him. Like, they kind of give him, like, this aura when he speaks. Like, anytime they save his speeches for, like, little moments. Like, I thought they did a really good job of trying to put you in the mindset of someone who would jump into this thing.
Right.
Before they really got into the shit. Because really, the documentary is really about Sheila.
Right, it really is. It really is.
It's really Sheila's story.
Right. Sheila's this Bhagwan's right hand woman.
Yeah. Right. But she's really the leader. She's really the person who created. Because he really, during the bulk of this, during his vow of silence. Mm-hmm. So he's not speaking during much of this. So she's really the voice of the church. She's really in charge.
Well, what's interesting about what you just said in regards to the documentary. So mostly, I don't like its aesthetic, I guess. It's okay, mm-hmm. mostly because I'm not learning. I'm gawking, and I think we're asked to gawk at this. And I really wish it was more, I don't know, almost like Ken Burns, where it's actually investigating the social cultural implications of this, not just like treating it in a vacuum. It does a good enough job to hint at some of those things. The way it's edited, the way it's cut, the way it's arranged, right? The way speakers are lined up to make you sort of think about them in a particular juxtaposition, but it's way more invested in just being, I guess, docutainment, if you want to call it that.
Netflix, yeah.
Well, not all Netflix ones are like that, though.
I know, but this is like it's longer than most Netflix documentaries, is because it's like episodic. Like, I think that's what they're going for, because they're really, really, really kind to the Rajneeshis in this documentary. Like, they really, like, I've done some research outside of it. They don't get into some of the other shit. Like, they really stay at the hierarchy of the Rajneeshi group. Like, we only meet upper level people. They don't talk to anybody on the lower level. And we also don't know, like, there are different things about Paquan that they don't talk about. Like, to join his community, you have to disavow your family. So he makes you not communicate with your family, which is like Scientology cult shit.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. They don't talk, and they don't mention it at all. They don't even mention it in the last episode. Like, they never mention things like that about him. They never mention like his thoughts on like drug use and things like that, because they leave it kind of vague that they're all getting fucked up, but there was a strict ban on drugs there.
Right. They let you think that they're getting fucked up, but they're not. Mm-hmm.
They're not.
Yeah. And you see all these like, stock footage of these like orgies type things they're having, and you think like, oh, they're all fucked up. Like, no, they're 100% sober, which I think makes you read mm-hmm. that very differently.
Oh yeah,
but stuff like that, like, and I think in a bigger sense, if I can suggest something missing that I can encapsulate everything you just said, we get no sense of the lived experiences of just the average Rajneeshi. Like, I wanted more of that. What are they actually practicing? What mm-hmm. is their beliefs? You know, how does this shape your day-to-day? Like, lived experiences. This becomes so sensational that it's entertaining, but it's kind of like fast food. It's not it's not intellectually nourishing in any way.
No, it doesn't get deep in, like, the shit I want to know about. It's very good on a surface level, but it never gets into the deep shit at all.
Yeah, it's easy to watch, that's for sure. It's definitely entertaining. And and the Rajneeshi story is worth telling. It's so fascinating.
Oh, yeah. I'm just amazed. Like, I hadn't heard of it before this. Like, I mean, I was 3 years old when all this shit went down, but it seems like there are things that happen like this big that still trickle down to like my knowledge, like what things I know about this country. I didn't know anything about this.
I didn't know anything about this either. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's insane because it looks like this was a huge fucking story. She's on Nightline, fucking every night.
And it was one of the biggest immigration cases because they were doing green card marriages. I think on some level, the fear of the green card marriages could probably be traced back to the Rajneeshis because they really did that.
Yeah, and very, very smartly. Like, damn, they were good. They were good.
I love that part. I love using the master's tools against them, right? Mm-hmm. I know Audre Lorde says that you can't tear down the master's house with the master's tools, but they say, well, we could build our own house.
Yep.
I love that. I love that element of it. There's also, and I'm giving it a lot of crap, but I did find it a really interesting kind of myth and reality structure to it, because the first three episodes are really making you almost like they're really almost selling you in the Rajneeshis. It's really from their point of view, and then the second three episodes, you start hearing all the shit they did behind the scenes. It's like, oh, here's the other foot. But in particular, we don't really hear. Obviously, we don't hear Bhagwan talk, who's the guru. And I want to talk a little bit about Bhagwan here. First of all, when I saw him, I was like, this is where, talk about things we don't talk about, but still weirdly like echoes through culture. The image of Bhagwan is the cliche Indian guru. And I realized, like, this is where it comes from.
Yeah.
Like Love Guru, that stupid movie with Michael Myers.
Mike Myers, yeah.
Eat, Pray, Love, Arrested Development, when they're making fun of stuff like this. Like, that image is Bhagwan.
Yeah.
I thought that was just an interesting thing. And it made me wish, and I haven't watched the episode, so I don't know if they reached this point, but it made me wish that, can we talk about this more as a cultural phenomenon? Because this is also why we have the proliferation of, like, yoga classes and tarot.
Yes. So, yeah.
And I'm into both those things, and Bhagwan has shaped my life without me even knowing it.
Yeah, because I was watching it with Kelly, and Kelly's super into yoga. And when they're going through his five tenets, she's like, oh, yeah, we do that. Oh, yeah, we do that. Yeah. Oh, I know someone who does that. Everything on there.
Yeah, yeah, a lot
is
of
so ingrained into our culture now.
Yeah, I was just like, what the? this is where this came from? And then you think, like, this is only from 1980?
Yeah. And I didn't know anything about this. It's baffling to me. Like, how did I not know anything about this?
But my favorite thing about that is in this fourth episode, Bhagwan breaks his vow of silence to speak out against Sheila, right? Because Sheila's being excommunicated. And I don't know what I was expecting. Like, I don't know what I thought I'd hear. I don't know what I thought I'd hear. But I definitely didn't expect to hear, like, him saying, like, and I'm only barely paraphrasing, that bitch is mad that I never fucked her. Like, it's one of the things he says. And he calls her a bitch. Like, this is like this austere guru religious icon. He's just like, she became a real bitch. And I was like, what? Like, this is not who I thought I was getting. It made me weirdly love him more. Or not love him more. I don't love him at all. But really made me like him. But at the same time, like, how did not half the people just get up and walk out when they heard him talk? And he's just like this kind of mildly douchey bro dude. He's not even.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, I was just, I could not. I'm still dealing with that.
He had 40 Rolls Royces and a diamond watch that was $1 million on his hand at all times. Like, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Crazy.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's great. Yeah. It's great.
It's definitely entertaining. I definitely would recommend people watching it, but don't expect to learn. This is definitely not Ken Burns.
No. It's not that level. It's a fun little look at something like that happened really recently. That it's interesting to look like. That's a good piece of American history I didn't know about that now. Like, I'm more interested in.
Yeah. Like, if it's as a jumping off point to learning.
Yeah.
to get yourself invested in a topic, great. But yeah, this is definitely not Dan Carlin either. Like, you're not learning anything. You're not
No. But it is interesting to look at that era. So you had Jim Jones, who was a big thing that led to, like, people looking at them bad. And then after that, you have David Koresh.
Yeah, yeah.
These roles have been taken by politicians now. Like, Trump is just a cult leader.
Maybe. I don't know. I guess I'm hesitating, not because of Trump, because, you know, fuck Trump. But one of the things that made me think about is, like, what exactly is a cult? Because that word gets thrown around a lot, and I don't know.
It's just a religion that not enough people believe in. That's literally all it is.
Well, then, can we really call Trump a cult leader then? Because he won the presidency.
No. I think it's more. Yes, Trump is a religion instead of a cult. I think his followers are the people who really love Trump. He can do no wrong. He's deified in their eyes. Yeah. And I see a lot of that in Sheila. Like, I think Sheila and Trump have a lot in fucking common. And I get, because he's captivating. If you're on his side, he's like, fuck yeah, he's going to fuck them over because they're the other side. You know, like, I just see a lot of things I saw in her and him. Yeah, and then the things I saw in the people who followed her, who follow him.
Yeah, they both have this, like, aggressive charisma.
Yeah. Yeah, some people need that, like, because the woman who tries to commit murder in it, the Australian lady, I can't think of her name, Sheila broke her mentally.
Yeah.
Then got her to do her bidding.
Yeah, yeah. Just slowly manipulated her.
Yeah, like when she said, like, they made her clean toilets for the first year, and then Sheila made her wax her legs, and just, like, she was, like, just devoted to her. She just broke her. She broke her mentally. Like, Sheila's a motherfucker.
Well, some of these people, though, seemed like they might have been broken ahead of time. She might not have broken her so much as just found a broken woman and just put her back together in a way that, you know, was useful.
Benefited her.
Exactly.
No.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, it's definitely worth watching. I'm glad you turned me on to it. I'd never heard of it.
Yeah, yeah. It was interesting. It's because of that new California cult. The one with Allison Mack from Smallville and, like, a bunch of other people. I can't think of the name of it. But people were saying, like, this is the new Wild Wild Country. Like, they should do that. And I was like, what's Wild Wild Country? And that got me to look at it.
Oh, I don't know about any California cults.
Oh, yeah, this is the new one. It's a sex cult. Like, they were trafficking women into Mexico.
Woof.
Yeah.
See, you know, shit like that gets cults a bad name. Cults, if you're listening, fewer sex trafficking rings, more guerrilla cities. Like,
yeah.
Because I was like, after two episodes, like, is Ranish Puram still there? I'm ready to move there now. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, that was so. That part is worth watching just for that part. To see these 150 people just be like, fuck it. We hate everywhere, and everywhere hates us. Let's go into the desert and build a city. It's the most pioneer fucking shit I've ever seen, and it was just like, I was tripping at how quintessentially American is in regards to you know, the American mythos. Like, they moved west and they, you know, made something of themselves, recreated their identities, they had new names. Like, it's such an interesting, like, because immigrant story in that sense.
Yeah.
Even though many of them are internal immigrants in the sense they're Americans moving to another place of America, but it was so quintessentially American, at least that element of it, that I was just ready to pick up and move.
And the government shut that shit down.
Fuck yeah, of course they did, man. And they just see themselves as heroes for it too.
Yeah. Oh,
like,
yeah.
Successful oppression of a religious minority, like,
yeah,
with no sense of hypocrisy. Many of them bringing up, you know, constitutional shit, and it's just like, are you fucking serious? Like, you're openly plotting in the media. Like, the brazenness of it is such a trip. Like, openly plotting against a religious minority composed of largely other Americans, and it's just really, it's depressed. They're a good foil, I guess, in terms of the narrative, but you know that you're going to lose, right?
Yeah, no, you will not beat the U.S. government. They will always win.
Yeah, they're going to win. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not. The best you can do is carve out some level of, because I don't want to say you never can, because we wouldn't have things like civil rights if you could.
No.
But the best shot you got is to just generate sympathy with the voters and carve out a little safe space inside the legislation for yourself. But you're definitely not going to just take over head on. Like, it's just not going to work.
And also, that civil rights war fight, like, it's still going on and the government's still winning.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, fair. But I think we can appreciably say that it's easier for people of color and people of sexual orientations to defend themselves than it has been in the past. You can't deny that reality. But yeah, of course,
no.
Civil rights is perpetual.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like peace. Peace isn't earned. Peace is maintained. Right? You don't get to...
Mm-hmm.
You don't just create a state of peace and then walk away from it. You have to constantly keep the peace, right?
Yeah.
Just like civil rights. Like, this is... It's perpetual. Speaking of rights, I texted you yesterday saying that we should say something about the Santa Fe school shooting, considering how close it is to our worlds. It's 30 miles outside of Houston. We're both from Houston. We both have friends on GPD and HPD, and we both have friends who've had uncomfortable relationships with HPD and GPD. But obviously that doesn't necessarily factor into today, because as we know, a 17-year-old boy whose name I won't say because fuck him, threw pipe bombs and had a shotgun and I think it was some pistols. I heard reports that he also was carrying an AR-15. I haven't heard confirmation of that.
I've only seen the shotgun and the pistols. Like, I've seen other people saying the AR, but I think the most accurate thing that I've heard was the shotgun and the pistols. That's what the police say he had.
Right. From what I've surmised, he didn't use the AR-15 if he had it with him. He was using the pipe bombs and the shotgun primarily. No. And 10 people so far have died. 10 are still in the hospital.
No.
And you said, I don't know what to say about this, and I don't know.
No, either. I said, I don't have much to say about this. Like, this is what, the fifth major school shooting in the last 5 years?
I don't know exactly that number, but I have a different stat, actually, that I think tells this story much more effectively. So, if I can back up a step, right now, the U.S. Army has troops deployed in Libya, Niger, Syria, Iraq, Yemen, Somalia, Afghanistan, and the Philippines. Active duty combat troops. That is 8 countries. If you count Air Force that is doing bombing runs in places like Pakistan, then that number goes up, right? But on the ground, troops on the ground right now, 9 countries. And I say that because the Washington Post posted a pretty shocking stat, and that right now, children being killed in school shootings is outpacing soldiers killed in combat 3-1.
Fuck.
Yeah. It's just in 2018. That's not normal. Like, it was much different last year. Just from last year. So this year has just been the most violent school year in history. So we don't even have to go back, really, very far.
No.
We can just stick in 2018. This is never going to stop.
No, we're past the point.
This
is the new normal.
This is the new normal. It's and maybe it's, I'm cynical, and I'm the type of person who tries to resist cynicism, but we just don't care enough about each other in this country to ever do anything.
No.
We just don't.
Yeah, empathy's really lacking here.
Right, yeah. It's like, yeah. So people will say, like, oh, but, 80% of people support background checks. And I'm like, 80% of people probably aren't making that their primary voting position. They're probably not voting based on that issue. They're certainly not at rallies. 80% of the country is definitely not at gun rallies. So that's great that you want to imply that the country wants this, but they don't care, or they do something. Because I am over this idea, especially Second Amendment right people. nobody believes you when you say that you care about anyone else's children. Like, we know that you don't. Caring isn't an attitude. Caring is an act. You take care, you give care, you provide care. Just saying you care because of course they care, because it makes you look like an asshole if you admit that you, even to yourself, that you don't care. You're not doing anything, so you don't care. So fuck off. And for my own political history, for the longest time, until about 2-3 years ago, I was a, on Second Amendment gun control issues, I was a compromised person because I thought that was pragmatic. I don't think people want to repeal the Second Amendment. And I'm just like, I don't think you understand how difficult it is to repeal an amendment in terms of what has to happen. You have to get 2/3, I think, of the state legislatures on board with it, or else it doesn't happen. Yeah. So you can't just have a few senators champion a repeal bill. 2/3 of all the state capitals have to agree with it, and that's not, I don't think that's going to ever happen. And also in regards to, you know, gun rights activists, they've been playing this zero-sum game, all or nothing. We have all the rights. We don't have to give up anything. Why would we? And, of course, the logic of, like, I don't know, to protect children? Well, obviously that's not enough for them. So I have switched from compromise to all or nothing. Like, I've always said, like, look, if it's going to be all or nothing, sooner or later you will end up with nothing. That is not sustainable.
Yeah.
And now I have gone over to nothing. So now I'm officially like, look, if you aren't willing to give up some rights so that we can feel safer, then we're just going to take them then.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what else to do. We're trying to compromise, but you refuse. You refuse to have anything but all or nothing because you have all. And if you really are going to force us until all or nothing, then fine. Nothing it is.
I'm not there yet. I still think there's, like, a couple of easy fixes to this. Mm-hmm. Like, one, like really, and it, yeah, you know, like, it's the same thing we say every fucking time. Like, that's why I don't have much to say. Like, I've already said all this. Like, really, if we had a 24-hour waiting period, most crimes would be stopped dead with gun violence. Like, legit. Like, most people buy a gun and do something with it immediately. If we had a 24-hour waiting period, or if we had just regular normalized background checks, or if we didn't let dudes who beat women have fucking guns, a lot of this shit would be greatly reduced. Not over, but just greatly reduced. I'm okay with greatly reduced right now. I'm sick of fucking waking up and, like, learning that children died that day. Like I'm sick of it. Like, we're okay with this? Like, I have a 3-year-old nephew. Like, if I ever want to have kids, like, what the fuck? I can't send them to school? Like, I have to worry about that? Like, shit, man, it was just my kid's day, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I still remember. So I lived in Connecticut when Sandy Hook happened. And I know people affected by it. And even then, I thought, this isn't going to be enough. And it wasn't. Nope. And yeah, I mean, you just said it. Like, it's, and that's why I've become this sort of no compromise person. And I'm not a no compromise person by nature. But if the other side is unwilling to compromise, so compromise is off the table, I can either give up or fight for everything. So that's why I've taken that position. But I'm with you. Like, we could just do greatly reducing. Like, you know, here's one thing I've thrown around as an idea. I've tossed out there. Because the logic, which is ridiculous logic, that we need armed militia in case we ever have to turn on our government, I'm sympathetic to that. This is Malcolm X's birthday. Malcolm X felt the same way. I'm sympathetic to that idea. Although, let's kind of realize,
our government is so powerful, and they have so many weapons, like, that is just an unrealistic
goal. Yeah, realize that you're bringing an AR-15 to a drone fight, you know?
Yeah.
But, fine. So how about this? How about this? First of all, mandatory waiting periods, mandatory background checks. Like, you just treat it like a car. Just treat exactly like a car. You have to get a license. You have to register. You have to get insurance. Like, it has to be just like a car.
Yep.
And even if you don't want insurance, fine, no insurance. But just treat it just like a car in every other respect. However, you know, and you sort of nailed it when you said about the domestic violence thing. Alongside with that, most gun deaths are still by pistols. Like, it's like over 80%. So how about we let you have your military assault weapons, right? And in return, we ban all one-handed weapons. All one-handed weapons. All single. It can only anything concealable is just banned. All pistols gone.
Yeah.
All pistols gone. And if the math continues the way it's always been, hopefully that reduces greatly, maybe 70% of gun deaths. So, like, I would make that trade to let you have your AR-15 if you're going to give me all the pistols, right? Because you're definitely not going to win a war with the U.S. government with two Glocks. Like, you're doomed.
No. Greg Easterbrook said it best. Handguns are used by criminals and police officers.
Yep. Handguns. Ban all handguns.
Yeah, handguns. Nobody with a handgun, like, that's not, it's not a good self-defense weapon.
Right.
It's only really for crime, quote-unquote fun, which is why real, like, people have them. And then criminals and cops. Like, that's really it. And you, that's what handguns are for.
And we can disarm the cops last. They can go last. Once we get 5 years of, like, hey, this works. We don't really need you to carry a strap anymore. Then we'll take them. And we can replace that one with a gun that takes a second to shoot and load, right? So maybe, like, we could do some of these easy deaths, right? Because, you know, we got all these cops literally shooting off the hip. If you have to, if you have to, like... You know, I want to believe that if you have to, like, if you're carrying, I don't know, if they're carrying rifles of some kind, that they have to shoulder it, cock it, load it, that, and, you know, it's such a weapon of death that they'll think twice before just unloading 30 rounds into a dude for using a cell phone at his grandma's house.
Jesus. It's, you know, so recently my mom works at an elementary school. And so she texted me, like, really panicked. She texted me and my sister really panicked. She was like, there's been this white guy sitting in his car for 3 hours outside, and I've called the police, but no one's come to check it out. Oof. They said, wait for HISD police. So she had to wait for HISD police. So, and here's how sad this whole thing is. The man got out of his car, and she's looking. He gets something out of his trunk, and she says, oh, he's Hispanic. And all of her worry went away.
What's... Yeah, I'll say this about Hispanic peeps. We mostly keep a low profile.
But but that's where we're at. Like, that's when she texted me that, I was also relieved. Like, oh, okay. And then she found out it was just some teacher's there husband who was waiting on her in the parking lot.
What she should have done is called the police and told them if there was a black person minding his own business in a place he's allowed to be in. They'd have showed up. They'd have showed up with like three cars.
Yeah. And a chopper.
And a chopper, yeah. Yeah. And a news crew to interview the white woman who made the call to humanize her, but not the person that she called the cops on.
Yeah.
Right? She should have said, there's a black kid here trying to order a cup of coffee. They would have been right, they would have been out there.
But that whole story, it just kind of, it was like that. I was like, fuck, man, that's where we're at. And then a week later, this happens.
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
So. Yeah, that's where we're at.
I don't know what to say anymore, man. I feel like it has to be brought up. It has to be brought up. But like, as you said, I don't have much to say. I was like, we can't not say something. Yeah. But I don't know what the fuck to even do anymore.
Yeah, these kids. This was their last day of school.
Oh, are you serious?
This was the last day of school.
Of course it was. And
I just feel bad for these kids whose lives were taken. I feel bad for their parents who have lost their child when their child was like the best moment of your child's life is when they go up into adulthood. And that was robbed by this asshole. And I'm tired of this happening.
We said,
that's all I can say. I'm just sick of this happening.
We were texting about this too. And you said, like, what's it going to take? And my immediate response was, and I know this is cynical, is like, it's either going to take a bunch of rich enough white kids, because obviously these are public school kids, so they can't be wealthy, you know? They might be well off, probably middle class, but like, are we pretending that people care about the middle class?
The Parkland kids were kind of well off.
Yeah, they were better, but not enough.
Yeah.
Not enough.
Yeah.
And, or triple digits, because that's what it took in, was it Sweden?
And we've had triple digits. We had fucking Vegas.
That was a triple. That was only 50 or 60.
I mean, 500 people got shot.
No, we need 100 bodies. 100 children's bodies. Adults, no one gives a fuck. Jesus. We got plenty of adults. Like, we don't need any more. Like, we got too many. Unemployment's like 6%. Who gives a shit about adults? Someone's going to have to kill triple digit number of kids to move the needle here.
I don't even think of that. I don't know. We're okay with it now. It's like, it's normalized. Like, it's not if we'll have another one, it's when.
Oh, that's for sure.
I don't think we will. I think once Sandy Hook happened, we've decided we were cool with this.
Yep.
So this is where we are. We're cool with this.
You know, the Parkland kids would tell us that we're wrong, but hopefully they're right. Hopefully we are wrong.
This might, you know what? This needs to happen at a private school.
Right. Rich kids.
Yeah.
If it doesn't happen, until it happens to the rich, it's no, yeah. You know, as long as it's us, I'm not even, even poor, you know, it's just what? Us average
Joes. I don't
want
this to happen, though. That's the thing. Well, I don't need this to, I don't want this to happen anymore. Like, I don't want more kids to die so we can fucking wake the fuck up.
Oh, let's
you know?
Be clear. I don't want anybody, any rich person's yeah. kids to die. Like, that's not an advocacy. Yeah. That's not an advocacy plan.
I know.
But that's just what I believe. Like, that's what it's going to take.
Yeah. Like, although the best tweet, though, was that a black kid doing it. That's what it would take to stop it.
Yeah. I don't know that it would.
Probably not.
No. That's just going no. to... You know what that would do is make you know what that would happen? You know what I really believe that would happen? If it is some form of weird Jim Crow law where, okay, everyone has to get gun licenses now. Unless your grandfather had one, then you're good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some kind of grandfather loophole. But stuff like that is hard to erect from scratch because people are paying too close attention. So I don't think a black kid shooting... I mean, we had Fort Hood was a black guy, and that didn't change anything.
No.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, we just don't. But at the end of the day, like, you know, we as a gun owner or not, like, we just don't give a shit about each other in this country. We
That's just... crazy. You know what's crazy about that is I've sort of been directly affected by the two in Texas because I worked at when that one happened, and I had planned a veterans night for the next week for during a show, and then that shooting happened. And I remember we had a conference call about how we could salvage this event. Like, my bosses were literally asking me, do you think they'll still come? I'm like, I don't think they're fucking worried about some fucking show right now.
Yeah. Yep.
That's when I knew I had to get the fuck out of there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's it. That's all we care about.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, regardless of whether it's a corporate entity, a gun rights activist, or just a middle class person in the suburbs, like, or a poor person in, you know, in a rural area or even an urban area, like, we don't give a shit about each other.
Side note, I'm gonna need you to beep out who I worked for then.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna need you to beep that out.
Well, that's an opportunity to learn how to do that then.
Yeah. I was just, or just cut that entirely, because, like, yeah, I don't want to get in trouble.
Right. All this can go.
Yeah,
okay. I'll figure out a beep. You know, I've been wanting to rip off Jade's ding.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what I'll do. I won't do the ding. I'll do like a Mario clone.
Or Bossa Nova.
Oh, we should download the Bossa Nova music and make it a theme song for this week.
Yeah.
Nah. All right, man.
Yeah.
Well, we'll end on that laugh then.
All right, man.
All right, bud. Well, you know, hopefully, I mean, I don't even know what to say. I was going to say, hopefully we don't have to talk about this again, but we will.
We will. And I'll have the same shit to say again then that I said today.
Yeah, yeah. I hear it. All right, bud. Well, I'm gonna leave you. All right, man.